Welcome to Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. I'll bring you all kinds of stories from all kinds of people. Whether it's a live public conversation and we're speaking from the kitchen table of my 1965 Beeline travel trailer, from the studios or on the streets, please sit back and enjoy the conversation right here this time every week. From coast to coast and the middle too, from Colorado and Wyoming to Texas and West Virginia, and in my home state of New York, just to name a few, energy is being extracted at great cost to health, community, neighborhoods, and our natural resources of air and water. Today I'll be traveling to Dimock, Pennsylvania, where they can't drink the water because of well contamination caused by the natural gas drilling in the Marcellus Shale. I'll be traveling there with Mayor Calvin Tillman from Dish, Texas, where they can't breathe the air and they're getting sick and their animals are dying from the air pollution in their town filled with natural gas drilling operations. So here's a re-listen to a gas drilling forum. Tomorrow, there will be a public health and gas drilling educational forum at 4 o'clock at the Delaware Community Center in Calico, New York, in Sullivan County. With Trailer Talk's Frack Talk Marcellus Shale Water Project, we're exploring the impact of natural gas drilling and fracking on our water resources and the issues being debated in our neighborhoods throughout the United States and globally. We're facing a complete shift in the shale regions as the largest ever concentration of gas lies beneath our feet. Who are we and what decisions will we make? We're here at the forum at the Liberty High School. It is Friday evening, 7 o'clock, June 27th, 2008, and this forum is co-sponsored by the Catskill Mountain Keeper and the Sullivan County Division of Planning and Environmental Management. There are panelists who will be speaking inside. It is a beautiful, clear, blue sky evening in Liberty, New York, in the Sullivan County Catskills. And this evening is all about natural gas drilling.
My name is Joan Marie Roars. I live in Bethel in the hamlet of Smallwood. We've lived there since our son was 4 years old, and he's 22 this year.
So what do you think about, what have you been hearing about the natural gas drilling? What brings you to the meeting tonight?
I'm scared. I'm scared about what the implications are, because we just had to redo our well, and we don't have much. We have our home, and my son's across the road, my brother's down the road, and what does this mean for our well? And also, what does this mean overall? If they take something out of the earth, what happens? You know, what are they going to take from the earth, and how are they going to take it, and what's going to happen to the area around it? You know, it's not exactly like liposuction. I mean, you know what I mean? What are they going to
liposuction? Well, I think that even has some risks.
You know, talking about liposuction, I'll take a brownie. She's luring people in here with brownies, homemade brownies.
And it's working. I'm so glad, Joan Marie, that you joined me. So you're talking about being scared, being wary, wondering what it really means to take something, to extract something out of the earth.
Like the man I was speaking to, he lives on the other side of the county. If he goes all the way down and sucks something out of the earth, what will happen to where I live? And then what will happen around there? Will it cause an imbalance? That's all. And I'm going to find out what they're going to say, because maybe they're going to present things that will allay my... See, I can't tell you. I'll talk to you after.
Hi. What's your name?
I'm Dr. D'Amico from Livingston Manor.
What are your thoughts on the natural gas drilling, the Marcellus Shale, and this panel?
Well, I think that it appears that they have all the rights and all the protections and we ordinary citizens have no rights whatsoever in relation to pollution laws and contamination laws. They can contaminate and they can do that, and they're exempt from all the laws that we are obliged to follow. And that seems quite unfair. I think everybody should be equally treated. And these companies, even though they have a lot of money, and it might be worthwhile for a person to accept some of that money, but there has to be some kind of justice between the landowner and the ability to extract some of the minerals from his land. What I saw there was the companies had all the rights, and the individual landholder, if he wanted to exploit his water like I do, I want to sell bulk spring water and I have to undergo all kinds of laws, rules, and regulations, and they can come in and pollute, and they're exempt from all these laws. Doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem right, and I think this is the beginning of many forums, and certainly the beginning of the process of trying to regulate things, and also even deciding what we want here in the Catskills, what we want right here in Sullivan County. And
I think that if we can put a man on the moon, we can certainly learn how to extract oil and gas in a clean way. It might cost the oil companies more, but that's the price everybody has to pay. And I think the common person would accept that. What we don't want to pay for is the excess of profits, and they have no responsibility for what the ordinary citizen has responsibility for.
Well, Dr. D'Amico, thank you. Can I get a picture? What did somebody ask? I'm speaking with Judy Rosen.
About conservation easements, if the land is protected. And said no. And in Colorado, they weren't.
They weren't protected.
According to what I understood, so they could still do it.
Hello, Sabrina. How are you?
I'm doing well. My guests are Mary Hall and Judy Rosen. What did you think of this panel? What kinds of issues were raised?
I thought it was absolutely terrifying. And I have to tell you that we had Judy and I and a couple of friends last night. We had all been together, and we had been discussing this very issue. And I was very complacent, and I said, oh, it's not going to happen to us because we have these conservation easements, and we have all this state land, and we have all this and that and the other thing. And the reservoir.
New York City.
Yes, watershed. It appears that there is no clear answer to what is the situation of the lands in the watershed, DE something, whichever the acronyms are. They are investigating this, and they're going to produce a white paper at some point so that we will at some point know whether or not the reservoir makes a difference or not. And also, what I learned was that the rule appears to be that if 60% of property owners in the community, 60% in an area agree that they will lease their land, then the remaining landowners can be forced to lease their land.
That's what people who have been coming out have been sharing with me. One landowner, he said, I have 400 acres and I'll be forced to join in if my neighbors join in, which it looks like they're going to.
Neighbors are going to lease?
Well, he said it was looking like they probably would. And that seemed to be a number of people were saying, it really seems like we can't fight this, even if we want to.
I just really think that's such a defeatist attitude.
I agree. We have to fight and we have to protect the land.
Yeah, that's what all these organizations at West are saying, is that you communities have to join together and plan this before they come. And individuals say, well, yes, I have to send my kid to college, so yeah, here's my land. It seems like we ought to be able to do that.
We have to try, that's for sure.
The only
thing
is, it does seem as though the legislation, there is a presumption that it is beneficial to the state to have oil and gas development in the state. Consequently, you have legislation, for example, that says oil and gas development is exempt from clean water and clean air regulations, So we have to change that presumption, it seems to me,
It's true. And also looking at what kinds of jobs and what percentage of people would be benefiting. And what about the community? What about the county?
And also the people, someone asked a question about what is the impact, the drug and crime impact. And those two women from out west said that there's methamphetamine. The people who work 24/7, they get off at 7 in the morning on Monday, whatever, it's night for them, so there's people drinking all 24 hours. But that's also thousands of wells. We're talking here now hundreds of wells.
Yeah, that's the North Slope in Alaska, too. But what about this? I mean, it just seems to me that this gas development in this area is going to make it difficult. We'll get in the way of clean energy development. What about this sort of nascent industries of solar and wind? They're not going to be able to develop if the land is covered with gas drilling operations, So that's a reason, it would seem to me, to change that presumption.
Well, and those are also, as we know, they're clean, they're sustainable, they're not finite. And so why can't we come up with subsidies, for instance, for these farmers that are struggling or being offered money by the energy companies, why can't there be something that gets developed to offer them incentives for clean energy?
Well, let's hope that this is the impetus that will get that going. You know, maybe it is. I mean, maybe it is the push that says we got to do something right now, you know.
What makes people think that you can take stuff out of the center of the earth or inside the earth and not affect what goes on?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's why there's all this stuff going on. You know, maybe the earth's angry, like, hey, that was my lubrication system you just messed up. Yeah, it's squeaking now, you know. I don't know.
There are a lot of assumptions being made, aren't there, that we can take and do and destroy and use with no adverse ramifications, which, well, it certainly hasn't gotten us to a very good place.
That's been going on a long time.
Yes, hasn't it? So maybe, you know, that's the part of it. It just, it has. But when does the conversation shift? When do the actions shift to something else?
Now.
Right now. Right now.
I have to tell you that there is like a now thing about this. I had this conversation with David Rothenberg, wrote a book that you might remember called Why Birds Sing, and he has a new book about whales. He said, in the 70s, when they discovered whale song, and then it became really popular. If you remember, there was an album called The Song of the Humpback Whale, and then it got included in Judy Collins' albums and everybody else's albums and so on. And people were like, wow, whales are singing. They're speaking to me. We can't kill them. We can't. So there's like a whole emotional, you know, crest that happens. And those things happen, you know.
It's true. Those things do happen. And
we need to make it happen now.
We do, right now.
About this.
I know. Well, we do. And the part that I still am trying to wrap my head around is, how did this seem to happen? That's the part that...
How it snuck up on us.
How did it?
Well, I think that it would have still been sneaking up on us, except for people are freaked out. And so that's why all of a sudden we know. I think, you know.
The first time I heard about this was maybe 8 months ago or something.
Yeah. Well,
that's been going on for a long time.
In smaller amounts. Yeah. But now it's, you know.
I mean, I looked up this afternoon. I looked up on the web about where was this pipeline. The most recent article I could find about the pipeline was 07, you know. So that's last year. And then there were articles about it in 06 and 05, too.
David, come in.
Hi, Margette.
Well, I will say one thing in response to the question of why did it sneak up on us all of a sudden, I think, because suddenly there's much greater activity. There was always this activity, as we learned today in the event tonight. There was all this activity in New York State, too, drilling, for the last 20 or 30 years, but always at a very low level. Well, suddenly the price of oil has multiplied many-fold over exactly the last 8 months that we're talking about.
That's true.
So it's suddenly much more profitable for the oil companies to begin coming in and producing more oil here, because they get much more for it. The price of oil was $10 a barrel just a few years ago, and it's gone from something like $60 a barrel to $140 a barrel in the last, I'm not sure, but I think it's around the last 12 months.
Yes.
So to me, that explains the sudden rush of activity, and because there's a sudden rush of activity, suddenly there's a flood of concern.
Kind of construct it in such a way that people may think this is really the answer, this is what we need to do, and landowners may really feel that they're doing something that's necessary and beneficial.
Well, and we're in an economic downturn, which means that people suddenly feel they need money.
Plus the new methodology, he was saying.
Yeah, and there's new technology which enables people to extract the oil at a lower cost. So they extract it at a lower cost, and they can get much more for it now with the market price of oil. And suddenly, because environmental concerns, at this level of activity, it's recognized that the externalities, all of the social costs, the community costs, you know, typically much of the oil industry has privatized the gains, and the community has borne many of the costs, the environmental costs. Well, now that's really coming home to roost here in New York State, where we've never had this problem before, and we heard tonight about people out in Colorado and Wyoming who've been bearing these costs big time for a number of years, and so it's very instructive to hear their point of view.
It is. So what will you do at this point, David? How will you fight this and continue to learn more about this?
Well, we have organizations, we have community organizations now, landowner organizations that I'm working with to try and identify the threats, the development threats, to the land that we love and the area where we live, where we're trying to protect the rural character and heritage of the land. And all of a sudden, it looks like the development threats are not only the real estate developer who wants to come in and build a supermarket on a piece of land. Suddenly, there are these oil companies who want to develop land, and, you know, suddenly it's right in our backyard. And the threat is more immediate and dangerous than real estate development because of the greater environmental costs.
Why, David, for you and anyone outside who's listening, why is the choice obvious for you? I understand you're not being faced with being offered a lease, but why are you so clear that you feel this is damaging?
I'll be very specific. Nearby where we live, there is, a couple of miles away, there is an area which is a flat area and could be subject to drilling. So suddenly that's one of the things we want to look at.
Well, for me it's obvious because nothing is, you don't get anything for free. So even if you think you're going to make tons of money, that's what I know about life.
Well, you create a whole lot of cost. And then you don't have to bear a lot of the cost. Other people bear the cost.
Even spiritually, you're going to pay for it. It's not that you get something for free. You don't, you know, even if someone hands you a ton of money, you know, 2 years, it's not going to be there anymore.
There are no free lunches.
Right, exactly. No.
But there are free brownies.
Yes, there are free brownies and
freer
strawberries.
And the cost was that Sabrina cooked them.
That's right. I made them this morning. Well, Judy, what you're saying is so true, and David as well. It's just interesting to me is why for some it's very clear and very obvious that this is most probably very damaging, that the energy companies aren't corporations to be trusted. They haven't proven their trust so far up to this point. But for others, it's not so clear. And of course, you mentioned, David, economic reasons, also fuel, the demand for fuel and a cheaper kind of fuel.
I have a bunch of friends that are thinking about it. Well, not friends, but people I know and do business with. And they're, I just saw them in there. They have like a couple of hundred acres. They're farmers. I get hay from them, or they're my farriers. And they're like, you know, they don't want to be working so crazy hard the rest of their lives. And this sounds really great. And they're like saying, like they said in there, like it's most of the, you know, it's the exception to the rule that messes things up. I don't know if I believe that, but, you know, and these guys, they came here and they want to learn, and they're not jumping up and saying yes right away. But to hear that you can get some money and you've been working so hard, I mean, these guys, their bodies are hurting them. You know, they're bent over from doing really hard work.
Well, that's right. What's important, though, in learning about these issues is that there are also ways for landowners to gain financial benefit and still not subject the land to the damage that is caused by leasing to oil companies. There are
they just told us that they're not protected.
But if a conservation easement, I know that if a conservation easement is structured in the right way and includes mineral, includes subsurface development rights, they can be protected. There are conservation organizations who will pay landowners to forego selling those rights. And so there are ways that the hardworking landowner who is, as you say, tired and wants to rest in the golden years is able to gain financial benefit without giving in to, without selling out, so to speak.
I have to tell them they might not know about that stuff.
Well, I think this is something we should discuss.
Can anybody? Don't the conservation people have to say, okay, we want to do it there?
There are priorities set by the conservation organization, and you have to discuss this with them.
I will tell them.
That's one of the things that our little group is doing.
Okay. Well, he's coming to shoe my horses next week.
Great. Okay.
But that's what I wonder about, what you're talking about. Will this maybe widen the scope of what you're talking about with these conservation easements? Will it now widen because it's it's radically shifted now?
Yes,
perhaps
it's become more complex. Before it was just the surface development, because the threat was commercial real estate development or subdivisions, many residential lots being carved out of a large agricultural, bucolic, or forested landscape. Now suddenly the threat is compounded by these issues, which include major environmental issues, toxic issues, hazardous waste, and the like. And so I'm sure that the environmental organizations are moving already to include these issues in their arsenal.
As long as they'll let wind power in.
Sure. So now, Sabrina,
maybe wind power,
we
solar
have to
power.
Go home and get some sleep.
I know we have a lot of work to do, don't we? We have a lot of doors to knock on, don't we? Come on in. The meeting. What was it called?
The Oak Table.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Bye, cutie. Bye. Great to see you. Talk to you soon. Here you go. Oh, my gosh. Brownie on the mic. What's your name?
Hi, I'm Mia Newman.
Well, thank you, Mia Newman, for joining me. What did you think? People are coming out of the panel, the forum.
I'm excited to think that people are getting involved and active, and it's nice to see a grassroots community effort just to be educated. And that's what we were tonight, although much more education is required, I think.
What did you learn? Were any of your questions answered tonight?
That our regulations need to be updated, that we really know very little, how very little is given to the public, because this is private industry, and private industry covets their information, their secrets, their formulas for getting the gas out of the ground. And that lawsuits are prevalent, that the enforcement of the laws that already exist is less than perfect. And if we have more laws, what then? And I don't think our federal government has been terribly involved in preparing the communities at large with, one, information, and two, protection. And that's very important to me as an individual who grew up in this area and covets their freedom, their natural resources of water and air, and those things may be impacted tremendously. And this is very scary to me, and I hope that greed is not the motivation for the community to get behind the industry totally, but they should go into this with their eyes open.
Yes. Well, thank you for sharing that. Where did you grow up and where do you live now?
I live in the town of Callicoon,
which is very impacted right now by, of course, the Millennium Pipeline going through, which are
well,
the access.
That's actually in the town of Delaware, in the village of Callicoon. I'm in the township of Callicoon, which includes Jeffersonville, North Branch, Callicoon Center, parts of Livingston Manor on top of Chandelier, which is also a site for water extraction. That happens to be where Leisure Time Water gets their spring water and sells it. And if the spring water and the aquifers are impacted by this, that industry will be gone, as will our resort industries. Although they're minimal at this point, we still have bed and breakfasts, we still have fishermen, we still have hunters. We have people who just love to hunt and fish and hike. We have a state park in the town of Rockland. How will they be affected?
You bring up really important points and why so many of us are living here or have stayed here and what we value so much. And it's scary to think of really how much work we're all going to have to do, whether or not you're a landowner who's going to sign a lease or not, but how much work we all have to do to really protect.
The two women speakers affected me the greatest because they had lived through this and they were not experts in their field. They're not lawyers, but they educated themselves and started their own grassroots. And I think they're an inspiration to myself and others. And I think that we need to get more involved and contact particularly our new governor and let him know what we feel about this, because the federal government, as I said, no longer protects our air and water as it had during other administrations. And I'd hate to think that Halliburton is winning this for the sake of the almighty dollar. I'm a health professional, and one of the aspects that was brought up this evening was the need for a burn center. Because at times these well caps may have explosions, and an explosion is could potentially burn these people who are, one, working there or are walking through the area. But we're not prepared. I know, having worked in our hospital for 12 years, we don't have a burn unit. The closest burn unit is Albany. And we don't have the backup infrastructure of volunteers, because we have almost all volunteer fire departments, almost all volunteer ambulance corps. We have a problem with volunteerism right now when the times are not so perilous. But with this, if peril is included, we don't have that infrastructure. And that's going to require money, big money, because as we all know, healthcare is not cheap. That's the last word I have to say on that.
Thank you, Mia. Mia Newman. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's your name?
My name is Roger Downs. I'm from the Sierra Club Atlantic chapter. Well, the Sierra Club Atlantic chapter has a lot of membership in Western New York. Many of our members are looking at their communities. They're watching the leases get bought up, and they're looking at the potential water withdrawals. And they're very, very concerned about it.
The water withdrawals?
Right. For this technology, this fracking in Marcellus Shale, the depths that they have to drill down to 6,000 to 8,000 feet, and then potentially as several thousand feet horizontally out from there, could require as much as 1 to 5 million gallons of water per well.
1 to 5 million gallons per well. So the question then is, where do they get the water from?
Exactly. And then once that water is used in the production of the well, there are a lot of contaminants in the water, and it's been demonstrated in other states through this technology that there are chemicals that are in the water. And we know the DEC is working on it right now, but at this point, they've made it clear that the information is proprietary and that they're hoping to get that information. We're not sure exactly if they have a handle on what's exactly going into these wells.
What a beautiful night in Liberty. I'm just minutes from my house. I'm at the Liberty High School, and this panel on natural gas drilling and all of the abundance of Marcellus Shale that we have sitting right underneath us here in the Catskills. This has been the subject of the panel tonight and of a lot of concern in this county, and trying to find out what it means, what the options are for landowners who have been presented with leases, and what we're facing in the country with our fuel needs, with our energy needs. So please come on in. I'd love to talk to you about this panel.
Is there benefits from this outside of that local guy that has his local property drilled on? You know, I mean, he benefits. Maybe he doesn't even.
Right.
Maybe he really doesn't. But like the local town, the local economy, the local luncheonette, the town grows. Local businesses will grow. There's more people.
I'm Brad Vickers. I'm president of Shenango County Farm Bureau in upstate New York, north of Binghamton, south of Syracuse. I was asked to come down here and meet with some of the local officials and meet with some of the speakers they've invited from out of state. They're, as you're probably aware of, from Colorado and other areas. And they have been involved in the gas leasing issue much longer than we have. Part of the issues that are going on is many of the general public just aren't informed, aren't aware of the issues. And it's very important that they attend as many of these meetings as possible to get up to speed. Signing a lease is, it's kind of like it's a very complex document disguised as a lotto ticket. And so if you think about it, you know, as a property owner, if you are willing to take your mortgage and sign it over and take it down to the local gas station, trade it in for 100 lotto tickets, then maybe this is what you want to look at. But if that's not your idea, then you really need to take time and understand what you're doing before you're getting involved in this.
It's Joan Marie again. I've just come out of the meeting. I'm for my life, my family, and my home, and I'm against this. I didn't realize the level of destruction, and I didn't realize the whole thing with the benzene and the cancer. The fact is that these ladies, I didn't want to insult them, but they come from flatlands out there, Colorado, Wyoming. Our lands are not flat. They hardly get any rains. We get a lot of rain. There's going to be a lot of spillover. I didn't realize that we had so little control over the earth underneath our feet. I'm going to go home. I'm going to pray. You make very good brownies. God bless you. I'm very upset. I didn't realize that. It's like a monster at my door. Good night.
Good night. From the kitchen table, out on the road, I'm Sabrina Artel. Trailer Talk gratefully acknowledges the Park Foundation, the New York State Council on the Arts, and the Puffin Foundation for their generous support of our work. Special thanks to the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance in Narrowsburg, New York. We couldn't do this without you, and it's contributions from people like you that make this project possible. Please go to the Frack Talk section at www.trailertalk.net and talk to us.
Thanks for joining me for Sabrina Artel's Trailer Talk. The music for the show, Patti Smith, People Have the Power. Trailer Talk is produced by Sabrina Artel. For more information, please visit trailertalk.net. Special thanks to WJFF Radio Catskill and the numerous people who have donated their time, resources, and conversations to make Trailer Talk possible. Thank you all who joined me in these conversations. I'm Sabrina Artel. Safe travels.